Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to be part of this conference. And I do have to say, I'm personally an experimentally minded person, and for me, many of those theoretical concepts are slightly beyond what I can grasp. However, I have always been interested, ever since I got to learn about quantum, the mysteries of quantum mechanics and the mysteries of relativity, about what happens in weird situations. And this is one such example where, you know, such a question. Okay, we send a photon into an interferometer, and by the way, this is a theory beam splitter, sorry about that. And what if we have a mass in there and it's rotating? Will we see anything, right? And this has been, those kind of questions have been bugging me. And there are others too, and it's only recently that I managed to convince Danny Turner to actually compute what the orders of magnitude would be for this situation. And it turns out that we need masses on the planetary scale to see like frame dragging or something. So that's one of the experimental ideas I had to put at rest. So for my background, so I'm running a quantum photonics lab at the IQC here in Waterloo, and mostly focusing on experiments on quantum devices, entanglement sources, long distance quantum communication, and also fundamental experiments. And I'm working with a range of students and postdocs, and I circled those who are actually involved in these satellite related things. I want to point out in particular Eduardo, who's just talked previously, is also kind of attached to us and assists us with theoretical insights. And in particular, I want to focus today also on some work we did in together with David Rideout on where we put together a large summary paper on also all kinds of various ideas and very challenging experiments which could be done maybe with satellites. Just taking a small step back and looking at applications. So why do we need quantum communication today, right? This is, of course, widely known. The point is that classical algorithms, which might be hard to compute on classical computers, but they are security relevant, could be potentially much easier on quantum devices or quantum computers. And in particular, this would affect key distribution protocols, which we have. However, QKD, quantum key distribution, provides a way out, since the long-term security is based on the laws of physics. And this is motivation to develop such kind of systems, and hardware has been built. This is an example of a commercial device from ID Quantique. They work quite well, and one can use optical fiber or free space, but the transmission loss allows only for about 100 kilometer, maybe 200 kilometer of distances. If we look at this on a map, it would mean, so looking around Waterloo, a circle of this kind of order would correspond to 100 kilometers. We could maybe cover Waterloo to Toronto. Now, going to further distances, which of course will be very interesting, is a huge challenge. It's important to point out optical amplifiers as such are not possible in QKD because they would essentially violate the no-cloning theorem. So one way to expand distances further is quantum repeaters by using memories and so on, and the other way is to go to space and exploit the fact that photons travel very nicely and unobstructed in empty space. And I'll focus, say a few more details about that later. But also, as already an indication I want to give is that by expanding distances for quantum entanglement beyond these few hundred kilometers, we might be able to explore interesting new physics. Why take quantum optics experiments into space? So the satellite would work as such that if I have a network at a CDA and another one a network at a CDB, these networks can be done with those optical fibers. And by bridging, I want to bridge the large gap And this can be done by using a satellite, for instance, as a trusted node. So there is a first key established between the ground station A and the satellite. And at a later time, as the satellite passes over the other ground station, there's another key, the QLB. And then by combining those two keys on the satellite and sending it down to the ground, the two networks can be interconnected. And thereby, essentially, global distances could be achieved. And QKD satellites have already been widely studied, and there's already a couple of activities going on worldwide, in Europe, Japan, US, where one of the pioneers actually also, China, Singapore is also working on it, and in Canada we have also looked at such kind of systems. This was trusted satellites. One can also have so-called untrusted satellites. The most obvious idea is to put an entangled source onto the satellite and send a two-photon sound. And the two receivers can test the entanglement and thereby then ascertain that the source is secure. Another way of doing it is, that's also a very interesting one, to go up. One could imagine having two transmitters sending the signals to a satellite and performing a Bell state measurement up here, and thereby effectively creating correlations between the two transmitters. This can be used for quantum repeater protocols with memories, or it can also just be used simply for laser pulses, such as doing detector device independent QKD. So in particular with Christoph Simon, we have recently looked at quantum repeaters and satellites, and it emerges to us that actually, in the end, we might have a hybrid system of having memories and using the satellite links for covering very long distances. But that's we're just entering or looking, starting to look into this. Now, so imagine we have such kind of quantum communication satellites or maybe even quantum networks which allow us to do very long distance entanglement, but what we want to do essentially from a fundamental point of view is maybe explore distances and velocities which are not even possible on the ground. And so one thing to note is actually that even if we restrict ourselves to the ground, even if we have a quantum repeater network, whatever we do, the distance between the two sites will be the diameter of the Earth, 12,000 kilometers. But of course, the long-term vision is we're looking for the interplay of quantum mechanics and quantum relativity. So we do want to think of can we explore what happens at a huge scale, much larger than our planet would allow. And of course, we want to see quantum mechanics in relativistic scenarios. There is a small lesson from history, is that whenever we push physics into new regimes or new scales, very often new physics can be discovered. And there's another side effect which comes back to these applications, actually, that if we have a global network, let's say a flotilla of satellites, now this is a picture for GPS satellites, where there are more than 20 of them flying around. We will, in order to get this the desired behavior of this quantum network, we will also have to have a full understanding of all the fundamental physics going on. So there is also from an application point of view, we should also get a good understanding of what is going on. And I'd like to visualize again what I said about distance scales. If we think of the ground, right, we're down here. At the moment, we could do maybe 200 kilometers and some velocities, so that would be maybe a very fast airplane or rockets. And if we look at, there's so much scale which still could be explored. So with today, and this bar here gives us an idea roughly of what could be feasible with today's technology. So a distance from Earth to Moon, which corresponds to one light second roughly, is what we think is the approximate limit for quantum experiments, quantum optics experiments, achievable with today's technology. But of course, humans have sent spacecrafts across the solar system to other planets, and this is kind of what is feasible, at least conceivable in the future, to consider for such kind of tests. I wish to emphasize this also to you as the experts in the theory of those kind of things, because this is something for you to also think about, right? These are the scenarios experimentally we can access, at least at the moment. So if you have ideas or schemes, this is the range you're allowed to think of. So now, what kind of fundamental physics can be explored? So actually initiated by a study we did for the Canadian Space Agency, we just went to a bunch of theorists. In particular, we had at the Perimeter Institute a range of discussions, and we just started essentially with a blank sheet of paper, essentially, what kind of things could we do, what is conceivable. And this was it started more than 2 years ago now, and just recently we put out a paper on the archive which summarized most of those ideas. It took us quite a while to put it in some kind of consistent way. I do have to point out this is still work in progress. Nothing is final, and of course it's a very big open topic anyway. But a lot of very interesting things have been discussed. So one thing we noticed was in essentially one of the first meetings, we proposed to put out a classification of experiments. We call it level 1 to 4, essentially categorizing experiments by the solidness of the theory. What does it mean? Level 1 essentially would be doing an experiment where all the theory has essentially been understood. We know what's going to happen. We know what's going to come out. It would essentially just be a verification of that. An example could be to do a regular type of Bell test over large distance. There we have a pretty good understanding what we expect. And on the other end of the scale, what we call level 4, is experiments where it's not even clear what kind of physics would be happening or would be going on, and so therefore we couldn't even estimate the kind of outcomes. One example of this would be testing quantum gravity or those kind of concepts where it's widely believed something might happen, for example, the diffusion of polarization states, for example. However, it's even too early, the experts tell us it's too early to even get orders of magnitude of those effects. And this is just the table of content. So we looked at entanglement tests, various forms, like starting off with the regular type of Bell test, and then looking at things like Bell tests with human observers, moving observers. Eduardo mentioned that already. We looked at relativistic effects. So this would include things like Lorentz transformation, how that might affect entanglement as it propagates into space. General relativistic, for instance, is entanglement in the presence of curvature, does it dephase, does it, might it decorrelate? Quantum field theories, Unruh effect in particular, there's already been a couple of talks about what this would mean. In the context of satellites, what could be seen? Quantum gravity experiment, already briefly mentioned that. These are the ones where it's even beyond that there's a clear understanding of what could be discovered or what could be seen. And then we also focused a little bit on maybe give at least an overview of quantum communication and cryptography schemes, very briefly at least. And then we finished off by looking at experimental techniques, how to measure those kind of effects, and also give a brief sketch of the technology. So I won't go through all the details. However, I'll now try to focus on a few little experiments we have identified, which we believe could be done even today with today's technology. And I'll use this also to convey to you what the capabilities are of today's experiments. So it was already mentioned by Eduardo, that at the moment we can consider low Earth orbit satellites, so-called LEO, on the order of 500 kilometers of altitude. And those satellites, they move around the Earth, right? Of course, this is totally out of scale. But by sending entangled photons, for example, from the ground to the space, one can at least test long-distance entanglement. One could characterize this quantum channel, the quality of the entanglement. And this would look like that. So now what we put into here is a simulation of the losses of the... So we have to take into account the atmospheric effects, diffraction of the beams. Then we have to take into account background counts from detectors and also the light pollution. And so essentially, we can plot for the actual distance from the satellite to the ground station how the entanglement quality would scale. And unfortunately, what we can see is even if we are in the range of good visibilities, right, entanglement correlations, we're never totally perfect. And as we expand the distances, it will even drop to zero. So essentially, even by putting in several of the known sources of errors and the known deficiencies, the first message is we're never going to be perfect, and there will be a limited distance possible. However, in such an experiment, conceivably one could take such data points, compare it with these kind of theory estimates, and at least observe, are there any unknown effects going on? Is there anything, any decoherence mechanism happening which would lead to a significant measurable deviation of such a behavior? Another thing to point out is that one of the big challenges will be when we send those photons from the sender to the receiver, we have to make sure that they that we can synchronize the sender and receiver so we can identify the detected events with the corresponding events on the other side. And from our analysis, we are confident that this can be done on the order of half a nanosecond, maybe a little better than that, maybe 100 picoseconds is feasible, but that's about it at the moment, at least, with today's technology. But it's also quite good. One has to imagine this corresponds to measuring the path of a ground station to the satellite, which is on the order of 1,000 kilometers, say, down to a few centimeters. Half a nanosecond is 15 centimeters in free space. The take-home message would be a polarization visibility of on the order of 95% is possible, time resolution for the synchronicity of on the order of half a nanosecond, and we'd also have a lot of background photons, a hundredth to a thousandth of photons per second. So, one other experiment we could then conceive of is, that would already be one step more advanced, is, for instance, if we had a delay on the ground station here, one could tune that delay such that the photons, we can change the measurement of when time of the photon on the ground and relate that to where the photon has, or how far the photon has advanced towards the satellite. So at least we could also explore is there any distance scaling or how does the measurement when we measure this other photon how does it affect entanglement? Another experiment we could conceive by such a scenario is looking for gravitational decoherence, such as proposed by Tim Ralph and co-workers, where the timing correlation of the entangled photons would drop as we go to further distances. And for LEO satellites, the one we're talking about here, if we had detectors of 500 femtoseconds, we would just about see something happening. So all we can say is already that, at least based on the current parameters, with our LEO satellite, it will be really borderline to see anything of such an effect. However, further distances in the future at least might allow to improve those kind of experimental data or experiments. Right. Another thing we looked at was, for instance, and it was mentioned this morning by Chancellor Bruckner, that the one could consider a interferometer experiment where one photon is created, let's say, on the ground, and there's a beam splitter, so one photon is sent directly to the satellite, and whereas the other one is delayed, and then sent at a slightly later time, so there are two time slots, and on the satellite, the interferometer is essentially closed, there is again a delay line, and it disallows to interfere the first pulse with the second pulse. Now what happens is that as the photon is stored in this satellite, the satellite would have moved along, so the satellite is traveling at on the order of 7.5 kilometers per second. So at least there is a small, it's a very thin slice of area which is covered by this interferometer. So it's at least conceivable to do the so-called COW experiment, COW type. And we have computed, given some kind of realistic assumptions, one could see a phase shift related to this effect, that the photon up here will slightly see a slightly smaller or at least a different delay than the one on the ground. And as pointed out this morning by Chaslav, it might also be worth to look for the drop of visibility and explore this further. So again, this is something which could be feasible in such a scenario. Entanglement and special relativity was pointed out by Eduardo also, that by having a delay here and timing this detection such that it happens exactly at the same time as this detection up here on the satellite, one could get into the scenarios where both detectors are, due to the relative motion, both detectors are either measuring after each other or before each other, depending on how the movement is at this particular point. So, and that can put some constraints on the interpretations of the collapse of the wave function, although of course there's not too much again, quantum mechanics itself, if we strictly follow the rules of quantum mechanics, it would not care about this kind of timing situation. Quantum mechanics only gives us the predictions for events, and the time ordering essentially would not matter. However, if one wants to start to interpret those results, such an experiment could put real constraints on how the interpretations would look like. And of course, another thing which could be possible is teleportation. One could like do the beam the photon to the satellites, have an input photon on the ground, and send it up with an entangled link to the satellite and have the output photon, and thereby at least demonstrate one node or one important piece for a quantum network using satellite. I wanted to give a few small details of how such a satellite could look like. The most simplest form could be just have a receiver where there's a so-called microsatellite with a telescope, some photon detectors, and corresponding electronics to record those events and send it to the ground. Such missions have been analyzed. So I mentioned already in Canada, we looked at such a microsatellite with various industrial partners, and a scientific team led by IQC, but also in collaboration with Calgary and Toronto. And we put together such a mission proposal, which is currently under consideration for this space agency. In Europe, it might also be widely known, there is a payload designed for the International Space Station, where the proposal is called SpaceQuest and is led by the University of Vienna, but there is a consortium of many universities. Essentially, the idea is to put an entangled photon source into the satellite and send the both photons down, or one photon. But also, it has been considered to send photons up and have a photon receiver in space. It's another possibility. And this is how such a mission could look like. As the satellite flies over, now in this case we consider the receiver in space, the photons are sent up, and on the ground one could have a kind of a switch where different sources or can be switched in as desired, and then perform different types of experiments with the same type of receiver in space. So the beauty would be with such a concept, we could change the hardware, we could use different types of photon sources as the mission is already flying and active, and thereby extend the range of cosmic experiments. This slide I was actually going to hide, but what it shows is one of the challenges. From space, we see a lot of light pollution. This is a picture taken out of ISS overlooking a part of Florida, and we can see, of course, a lot of light. So imagine having a ground station here sending photons, so we have to really pinpoint that small transmitter. And of course, we have to do a lot of consideration of link losses, and for instance, what we see here is how the transmission loss scales with the elevation angle, and then we can do statistics and relate this kind of situation with the actual satellite. And this is a typical time of flight, so it's a few hundred seconds where the satellite passes over, and the angle on the horizon, in the best case, over 1 year, it would reach close to 80, 90 degrees, only for a short time. So there's only a small time window of 100 seconds, roughly, where the satellite is at a high elevation and useful. So there's a lot of things to consider. I do want to point out that the two missions I presented briefly, the Canadian and the European one, is about doing photon-type experiments in space. There's also been a range of other quantum mechanics in space type of proposals. Some are actually active already. So just recently, people around Markus Astermeyer in Vienna and co-workers also from Germany, I believe, have looked at how to implement macroscopic superpositions in space of small nanoparticles. And there's an archive paper. The thinking there is that in the micro-G environment of space, one could maybe establish such a superposition for a longer time than on the ground, where it's constantly feeling the force of gravity. Mostly they would propose to look for gravity-induced type of decoherence effects. There's a big activity going on to do BEC-type experiments in space. In particular, German researchers are very widely involved in that. And they have, for instance, put together BEC experiments, traps, and all the kind of required hardware. And so far, they have done experiments in drop towers, where it's essentially, they have a tower, I can't remember, on the order of 100 meters high. They let it fall, and then for a short moment, the BEC is in free fall, so no gravity, and they can try to explore it for longer times. Again, the idea is on ground, if you have a BEC, let it go, it drops. So space would provide a longer interaction time. And there's another experiment, and I believe that is already about to be launched, if not already active, to put atomic clocks on the ISS and do very precise time measurements and look for very fine and subtle effects of gravity affecting clocks and so on. Since I'm an experimentalist, I do have to point out, I have two slides for an experiment we did to show that these kind of ideas are viable. We went to the lab and implemented a kind of a demo setup for an ALICE and a bomb, a receiver, where the receiver represents the kind of simulated satellite, and ALICE is the source which creates very precisely defined photons. So we do that by using a Mohs-Lok laser which creates picosecond pulses as our time reference. And those photons are then sent towards the receiver. And we have to focus, so one of the big focus was, this is for instance the time drift between Alice's and Bob's clock in nanoseconds, and as it whittles along, we have to, from the data, we have to figure out those kind of time drifts and in order to get our sub-nanosecond time resolution. And so the performance of our system was that by essentially bringing that receiver timing window down to the sub-nanosecond range, we can optimize, in this case, we optimize the secure key rate for the QKD. And then by doing this, essentially, we can implement QKD. So these are measured data points going down to close to 60 decibels of loss, so meaning on the order one of a million of the photons makes it to the receiver, and still we can use that for successful transmission. So the kind of losses and the situation we would have for such a satellite link can be at least we have a very good idea of how this can be achieved. And the next steps will be actually for us, for our experiments, to implement independent Alice's and Bob's, take it outside of the lab, and this is a dome which is set up on the roof of our building, and we will send the photons into the fields nearby. Literally, there are cornfields around here, and test, expand the distances and test these systems further as we improve them. I have to point out, this kind of research involves a lot of partnerships and funding. I have a video on how, this is a video how the satellite would grow the quantum key. And this is already my final slide. So, conclusions. I am convinced that putting quantum optics experiments into space is very interesting. First of all, for quantum applications, QKD, quantum networks, but in particular, it will allow us to hopefully look for this interplay of quantum mechanics and relativity. Many of those ideas and proposals for experiments are out of reach of today's technology, but of course we also have to think about tomorrow. Nevertheless, some interesting tests might be possible with today's technologies, and those are the ones I have listed. And I do have to say, this is still an open kind of area, or these are open questions, right? We are looking for further ideas. What else could be done? And one reason is why we want to know that, even if these are experiments which are really far in the future, even if we don't even have the faintest idea of how to do it at the moment. That is, we have to be aware that space experiments, you know, they are real fun, but they're also very expensive. So going to space can definitely be helped to be justified by having big fundamental physics questions that we can answer at the end. Even maybe if our current missions, maybe the first missions, like the one I presented, cannot reach the experimental ranges that or fidelities we need. But the more ideas we have about going beyond those kind of first experiments, the better. They can also motivate us to develop those technologies and to go into space. So this was my final slide, so thank you very much.